Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey guys, certification roundup time. You know, I'm always preaching, go a little deeper in your practice and take some certifications. So I wanted to let you know, this year we have added so many more. But like usual, we have our teacher training, which is a great certification if you want to deepen your practice or you're looking to teach. We have Reiki certification at all levels. Our sound certification's been added, so if you want to learn how to play the bowls, that's for you. Akashic Records, both basic and advanced. And intuitive healing, which is always one of our more popular ones that we run a few times a year. Crystal certification being added, and a tarot reading certification. So please, if you're interested, go to denmeditation.com, go to certifications, check out the schedule, or you can email denteachertraining@denmeditation.com and we can answer any questions you have as well. But here's some good news. If you don't live in LA or you don't have the time to like come in at our schedule, a few of these are already on our denanywhere.com site and you can do them at your own leisure. So go to denanywhere.com, check out what we have there, and we're always adding as well. So I hope you join us this year and get certified. Hey, welcome to Den Talks Podcast. This is Tal. I am your host and the founder of Den Meditation. Today we have John Paul Creamy, who's one of my favorite guests. He was early in the launch of Den Talks Podcast. He was episode 9. I do recommend you going back and listening to it because we get into his entire story, and his story is quite a good one and a dramatic one. I mean, he grew up in Boston, not the easiest life. I think he says here he lost 7 friends before the age of 20. I mean, that's some shit. This guy was an alcoholic, understandably, with that. And we do just talk about that transformation. Now, the transformation for him, ultimately, in a big way, was breathwork, and that's who he is now. He is a very well-known breathwork teacher. He goes around the world teaching it. His classes have 250-plus people in there, and he used to be a sober coach, and now he runs a sober coaching business. What is amazing about him, which is why I love having him here for you guys, is I feel like he's unbelievably relatable. He is just a guy who knows how to do the work, how to show up, and how to make shit change. And I feel like that at the core is what we're all trying to do. So look, we've got his certifications. We have his workshops on denanywhere.com. We're also giving you a discount if you listen to this, Den30. You're getting 30% off. So type in Den30 when you're checking out. And again, go to denanywhere.com. It is life-changing. I hope you really enjoy this podcast episode. We talk about how to step into your purpose, how to get rid of the fear, and how to do the work. And he gives you tips, but also he's just unbelievably motivating. I really hope you enjoy this episode. I get to be here with John Paul again. If you guys haven't caught it, please listen to the first episode that we did together. As he likes to say, he got real emo on it. And he does. He gets emotional, which is so fun from like a guy who likes to curse a lot and just be super tough. But this, we're going to kind of pick up from where we left off, I feel like. And you're always such a good friend. So in some ways, you guys are just going to hear a lovely catch-up conversation between two people.
Awesome. I'm excited to be here. Excited to see you.
Kind of. We were just talking about this, if he likes being in LA or not.
You know, it's bittersweet. You know, there's some beautiful memories here. I have some amazing friends, some people that I love here. But at the same time, the energy is really intense.
It is intense.
And And when I where I live now, it's very mellow and people are super sweet and kind everywhere you go. And there's zero traffic and life is just so much easier.
The lack of traffic changes everything.
It's just so much easier. So I come here and it's just really fucking intense. And it's just I feel like everybody's walking around here with PTSD.
So here's my question for you. And just so you guys know, he used to live here. He was teaching breathwork in Santa Monica and here in a bunch of different locations. And then he picked up his family and moved to Bend, Oregon, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And so did you feel the intensity and the stress of LA while you were here? Or is this something that is kind of like once you're on the outside, now it's like magnified?
That's exactly right. Once you're on the outside, now it's magnified. Like you come back and you it feels totally different. And you don't even realize it until you're gone. When you're in it, it's just like being in like a traumatic relationship. You don't realize till you step out of it.
Well, that's how it is a little bit for me with entertainment. And I'm looking, and not that you guys can see, Tom Noonan's our like lovely guest here today too. But it's funny. I felt that way too, kind of about entertainment, like where I feel this like twist of like energy of just everyone so tightly wound that when I was in it, I was okay. Like I felt it. But when you're on the outside, all of a sudden you see it so clearly. It's like, I'm still friends with so many people in it. And when you hear them talk and go into that kind of vortex, it's almost like stifling, you know? And I almost in my head start sending them. I'm like, okay, one day they're going to know they can breathe a little more. One day they're going to know, like, because you can feel it.
Yeah. You do the Ho'oponopono. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's a Hawaiian prayer. It's a clearing tool. It's called Ho'oponopono. And it's four sentences. It's like, I'm sorry, please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. And pono means to make right, to clear.
Oh,
clear,
I like that. To clear the air.
Yeah. And so you can send them that energy to say, I'm sorry. I love you. Please forgive me. Thank you.
Interesting that forgiveness is part of that.
I actually messed it up there. It goes, please forgive me. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you.
So forgiveness is part of it.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about that belief of why forgiveness is part of that, even if it's just you're noticing someone else's stress that you might not have anything to do with.
Right. Well, forgiveness isn't even for the other person. It's for you.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiveness releases you from the past, right? So, you know, there's so many people walking around there that are angry with people, their parents or somebody who did something to them. I mean, nobody on this planet gets away with somebody not screwing you over at some point.
No, it's not the whole point, kind of.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so, the more we think about it, you got to have something.
Right. But so,
something got to untangle.
If we hold on to that, we're the ones that suffer, right? There's a saying in recovery, it's like resentments are like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die.
Ugh.
So that stuff that we hold on to is what causes all kinds of problems, all kinds of sickness inside of us. All our emotions are what's causing sickness and health issues inside of us. So forgiveness is for you. It's not for them. And I say that in my classes all the time. You gotta forgive your parents. You know, they did the best they could with what they had. You know, there's this really beautiful Brené Brown thing where she talks about like literally starting to know and to recognize that people are really doing the best they can in every moment. And sometimes you're like, really? That's the fucking best you can do? If that's the best you can do, that's fucking terrible.
But
that's what I want to say. Like,
I know.
Your best
you.
Is shit.
It's like, pick it up a little bit. Step up. It's funny. I had this exact conversation today with my 4-year-old daughter. And it's a little complex. And I realized that at one point I look at her, I'm like, is this too much? Like, because I realize it. But it was that because she was really upset that her friend laughed at her when she fell. And she talked about it for like 3 days. And I kept being like, well, I really think she was, because I know this friend and I know them. I'm like, I really think she thought laughing was going to make you laugh. And she was like, but I didn't like it. And I was like, well, you have to just go up to her and tell her that. Like, hey, next time, can you just ask me how I am? And then I started explaining. I'm like, you have to know that everyone is trying to do what they think is the best thing.
Right.
And if you assume they're doing the worst, it's just going to be really difficult for you. And I keep going and I just see her kind of doing that thing where she's trying to process.
Yeah.
But clearly I'm like, okay, this is a lot for a 4-year-old.
If there's something there. My daughter is the same thing. If someone laughs at her, she gets so upset.
Yeah.
And I think that really just carries over into adulthood.
Of course.
But it's also hilarious when people get hurt in adulthood.
Yes. And also for some of us, it's easier to deal. Like if I fell, chances are I would laugh. Even if I were hurt, I would laugh because I'd want to like dissipate the situation, like not make anyone uncomfortable.
Sure.
Like, so that would be, but everyone's different. Like some people want to just be a little sad about it and want people to actually, you know, everyone's different. And so that's what I was trying to explain to her. It's not personal. It's never personal.
It's so painful to watch your kids go through to struggle and like, and to want to give them tools to work through it. My daughter was painting, And my father's an artist. I grew up, you know, as a son of an artist. And my father wanted me to be an artist.
And I want to talk more about your family, but keep
going. So my daughter's painting, and she's literally copying a painting that she watched my father do. And the trees look exactly the same, if not better than my father's trees. And my wife and I were like, oh my God, look at that. And then when
we went to put the leaves on it,
and she didn't like the way it came out, and she just messed up the whole painting.
Oh, she gets frustrated.
And then she had a breakdown, and I was like, I'm watching my fucking childhood right there in front of my eyes. Like, that was me. That was my frustration, like not being able to get what was inside of me down on the canvas, down on the paper, and just being ultimately so frustrated and angry.
What was it for you, though? What was the translation? Was it art also?
Yes, it was art. It was art. Yeah. My father wanted me to be an artist.
I don't think I knew this part of you.
Yeah,
that's so,
so
funny.
Most kids' dads want them to be like
a football star.
Yeah, and right, like my dad's like, you call that perspective?
Like, I'm from a Jewish family, so for us, it's a doctor and a lawyer.
You call that shading? You call that perspective? Do it again. No, he didn't do that. I'm totally kidding. He wasn't like that at all. But I was painting.
It's like he screamed. He didn't rip the paper up.
I was painting nude pregnant models when I was like 8 years old.
Did you learn about, like, was some of this like your first instances with like a naked body and set, like
maybe I don't.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's weird, for sure.
Like, did you ever get a boner? I mean, as a kid, when you have no control over this
I never not have a boner. I always have.
I don't want to know. I'll be either insulted or grossed out, so I don't want to know. So no, but seriously, do you remember? Because that's young, and like you're going through a lot of changes.
Yeah, I don't remember having a boner at the pregnant model, but I do think pregnant women are beautiful and amazing. You know, but I don't think it gives me a boner today.
So did you like art, or was it purely your dad?
No, I like art. But the problem was I couldn't get what was inside of me down. And the frustration and would just lead to anger and a meltdown. And I took all these art classes my whole life. And then I would see someone paint or draw that had never taken an art class that was amazing. And yeah. I go, this is a gift that I don't have. And when I walked away from it when I was like 12 or 13 years old.
I love it. When I walked away from my art career at age 12.
it kind of severed my relationship with my father in a way. Not that he was like, I did it. It wasn't him. It was me. Like, I kind of ended the closeness that we had.
Did you end it because you didn't know any other way to communicate with him or what to bond with him? Or did you end it because you were nervous to like be a disappointment because you weren't?
No, it wasn't that. It was just like, I think I just... I didn't want to do it anymore.
And you just didn't, you were afraid he would convince you to? And that was
that was our connection. I didn't want to do it anymore. And then I found, you know, friends and drugs.
Right. What was your mom doing during all this time?
Well, I have a younger sister, so she was raising her. And then, you know, I have an older brother and an older sister. So she was being a mom.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, four kids. Yeah. All different ages, like all across the board.
Oof.
Yeah.
I mean, now that you have kids, don't you see how painful that is? You're like, oh my God.
I can't imagine it. My wife was talking about having a third kid, and I was like, no way. I can't do it. We have two beautiful, healthy kids. I'm not rolling the dice again.
All right. Like, I got it.
And I'm old. I'm not like a young spring chicken.
Yeah, energy is a different thing.
Yeah.
But so wait, so your dad was the one you had a closer relationship with. Like, what was your relationship with, like, with your mom?
I mean, my mom is sweet. She's kind. She's loving. She's generous. She's a beautiful soul. And she's, you know, dedicated her entire life to just raising her kids and one of her grandkids as well. So she's kind of like a martyr in some ways, you know, because my dad's difficult.
How's your dad difficult?
He's got like a kind of a narcissist complex in a way that, like, we could be having any conversation. I could just win an Oscar, and he could be like, let me show you about this painting that I did that's like the Oscar. Like, he brings it back to his art.
It's always about him.
Always about him and his art. It's always about his art. It doesn't matter what you're talking about. Literally, like, you can't even get the sentence out. It'll steer it back to his art.
So when you removed art, you really did totally just remove the relationship. So tell me about, you know, for those of you who don't know, and please listen to that first episode because we get really into it there. You had, like, a rough guy. I mean, you had, like, many injuries, many fights, stabbings.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was not necessarily a pretty childhood, and you started drinking early.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to hear this thing. It went, you were art, and then you found the group of friends that kind of, it sounds like, was it the friends that got you into that space, or was there other stuff going on?
No, I mean, I think I have an addictive personality. You know, I dive into whatever it is I'm going to do, right? So if I'm going to doing drugs, then I'm going to do drugs. Like, well, but drugs also freed me. You know, they freed me from the uncomfortableness and the self-consciousness. And we talk about this, that I'm really sensitive, right? And so my whole life I heard, whenever I would complain about something or something would bother me, I heard, you're too sensitive, you're too sensitive. I heard, and that translates to there's something wrong with you.
Right.
But what I've discovered now that I'm comfortable with my feelings and my vulnerability is that my vulnerability is my superpower, right? Because when I open my heart in my classes and I get vulnerable and people hear the emotion, that gives them permission to get emotional and let go of all the shit they're hanging on to.
So what still, like, makes you very vulnerable now? Like, what in your life do you feel like?
Everything. I'm a walking raw nerve. And so, you know, I can see the helicopter crash with Kobe Bryant, I mean, and it breaks my heart.
I can't. I'm, like, on an ESPN wormhole until, like,
I don't hold that stuff in. Like, I just let it out. But so I had this teacher training, this breathwork teacher training this past weekend, and it was in Calabasas, right where the helicopter went down. Yeah. So we were right there when it happened. And, you know, I shared about it. And I shared that, like, you know, tomorrow is promised to none of us. Like, we have to live our lives as fully as we can today and as much gratitude and as much love. But, like, I also in my training, I will get angry at people and I'll yell at people if they're late. And I can be a real jerk. And that's the other side of being really sensitive.
I love you, though.
Thank you. But that's the other side. I tell people, I'm like, that's the other side. Everybody loves, they go see, you know, they saw me in the heel thing or whatever. And like, oh, he's so sensitive. He's so raw. And it's like, you love that until I call you out for fucking being late.
Right.
You know what I mean? Until you see me get irritated or angry. But that's the other side. It's all right there on the surface. And that's how I want to live my life.
Well, it's so interesting because I was just talking about this. I do find that there, especially in the spiritual world, and I even hate saying that because spirituality is just the world.
Yes.
But it's like, especially in this world, people forget what the main point is, which is there's a totality and a wholeness that is all different flavors and layers. And like you said, you are super vulnerable and can cry at a dime and you might scream and you, or you might like be the angry, but it's you and it's all you. And none of that changes. It's who you are. You might balance differently and you might lean towards one. And I find that there's this like, people really don't like to be open or okay with other people's wholeness.
Yeah.
And it makes me really sad because I find then indirectly what you're doing is you're eliminating your own ability to transform and grow. Because if you automatically believe someone else is defined by one thing, whether it's the anger that you gave in class or, you know, the sweetness and the sensitivity, and by not allowing them to have anywhere in between, you're just kind of telling yourself it's a limiting belief that you too cannot transform and grow and evolve. Totally. I've been thinking about it a lot actually with the Kobe stuff. Like, I can't stop thinking about it because, you know, of course, there's always those people who people are sad and then they have to throw up like, he's a rapist. How could you? And it's like,
I saw that a lot. And it was so disappointing to see that out of people because that case, I followed that case to the end. A lot of people didn't follow that case to the end because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that came out that, you know, he could have been very well innocent. And there's nobody knows what happened in that room.
But, and even if it was.
It was 17 years ago.
Yes. And also, again, a man is many things.
Yeah.
And I like when I saw that, especially there was one that was really angry and really mean. And I remember being like, I hope for you on your moment when you pass, people aren't singing all the negative things that you did. Because none of us, maybe there's like a one here and there, but very few of us are ever going to get to that point having not done some shitty things in their
lives.
Listen,
I've done more shitty things than your average person.
I know, and I love it.
There's no question about that. And that was, you know, part of my healing through breath work was healing all that stuff. Because when you do shitty things like that, there's no way you don't feel it. There's no way you don't feel the shame around it. And that shame is shame is the hardest emotion.
Yeah.
It's the worst emotion.
I think it's an emotion that creates people to, like you said, to numb because you don't want to admit it. I always say if someone kind of knows they're wrong subconsciously, they'll usually dance around being right because the idea of admitting it, the shame is so hard.
Yeah, shame is the hardest one. And so clearing out that shame so that you could, listen, there is nothing out there that you have done that makes you unworthy of your own love. And that's just the truth. But some people, they have so much shame inside of them that they don't feel that they can even love themselves.
What are you thinking about right now?
I'm thinking about this guy that I sponsored for 10 years and that committed suicide. You know, we talked about this, I think, before. You know, it's just like, and I'm thinking about so many of the people that I know and I love along the way who have committed suicide or have died or whatever. And just all the things that, you know, that and all the people out there who are feeling the shame that feel like they're not good enough in some way, you know, because of something that happened to them or something that they did themselves. Right? Something terrible that they did themselves. And you can release that. You can clear that. You can get rid of that stuff. And so I feel like that's my job. That's my mission, is to help people heal from that stuff. And to come back to what you said earlier, which is like about allowing all that other stuff. It's like, because I'm a teacher of breath work, people put this fucking expectation out there that I'm going to be this enlightened person and I'm never going to get angry. And I was just telling Tom on the way here about some comment.
Tom, you're a star of this podcast. I love it.
Some lady commented on my thing on Facebook. And, I should just leave that shit alone.
Yes, I've had this conversation with you before.
I know. Everybody tells me this. All of my friends. And they're like, you cannot go on there. And I didn't. Some lady once said, like, this is a hoax. And I was like, you know, you need to come to a class. And she said, only true therapy works. And this is a hoax or whatever.
Well,
and I said, well, obviously true therapy has not worked that great for you that you would go on someone's Facebook and make a negative comment like this.
Absolutely. I think right? That's a great response.
Yeah. But then I went on to say other things. So anyways.
Stop.
I know.
My wife just as bad.
I have to run things by my wife.
Good.
I have to show her emails before I send them. It's like... I need a better filter.
But you know that side of you, which I think is also huge. Again, it goes back to us acknowledging the totality of a man next to us is also acknowledging the totality of yourself.
Yeah.
And that comes with everything. It's like, what are the positives? Like, learn to love them. But also, what are the perceived negatives? I mean, nothing's truly negative, but like... And own them and love them. And it's the same thing. Like, you know that you might be quick to react. Like, know that about yourself. And I love it. And then so you go to your wife. And, you know, that's a beautiful solution.
Do you know the love languages? The five love languages?
Yes, remind me. It's service. I haven't looked
acts
at this
of service.
Acts of service.
Words of affirmation.
Yes.
Quality time.
Yeah.
Physical touch. Mm-hmm. And gift giving.
Oh, right. There's always one I forget.
Yeah, me too. So my two main top love languages are acts of service, what you do for me.
Yeah.
And the other one is words of affirmation.
Me too. But mine's words of affirmation and then
Well, so what's
right
the opposite
below?
Of words of affirmation? Criticism.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like, and now that I'm bigger than I've ever been out in the world with this breathwork thing, I get more criticism than I've ever gotten.
Of course. And because people like to take down people.
Yeah. It's painful. It's like people love to put people on pedestals and then they love to take them down, too, especially with celebrities.
It's like spectator sport.
Yeah. It's painful. I don't know, you know.
And it's sad. I mean, again, it goes back to that Kobe thing. It really got me because I was like, I mean, there's so many angles to it also. It's like there's so much else that, first of all, don't mourn him. No one's forcing you to mourn him. Like, don't mourn. If it doesn't work for you and for some weird reason, then don't do it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the victim, like, I'm sure this is very complicated for her and her family, and it should be. But, like, for a lot of other people, they were touched by him, and you can't take that away either. Like, no. You can't take away someone doing something great for someone else just because they also might have done something bad. It still exists. Still exist.
Someone on my Facebook put on hashtag rape Colby and then hashtag RIP Colby. And I was like, I started to write, this says way more about you than it does about him.
It's true.
You know, and then I deleted it. That's what I do all day long. I write comments and then I delete comments that I don't.
I do that on Facebook a lot too. It's funny because I'm on a certain like a mom group too. And I'm always like, and then I'm like.
It's a bummer because there's people that I really like and that I've known or that I have feelings for, good feelings for. And then I see something that they post and it changes my opinion of them. You know, I start to judge them. I'm actually reading Judgment Detox right now by Gabby Bernstein.
Judgment Detox, how funny.
Yeah.
Is it good?
It's pretty good. Yeah. I'll let you know if it works.
I think you'll always have an element of it.
Yeah. But New England in me isn't going anywhere.
Of course. Let's go back to the shame, though. So for you, back to your childhood, so your mom was very sweet and kind and sounds like kind of angelic doing her thing.
Yes.
And your dad was kind of a one-path man. And so when you weren't under that. But then you got caught up in this... You were talking about that you had all this frustration and you were sensitive. Mm-hmm. And so the drugs kind of made you... I remember you saying this on the first episode, too, that like the alcohol made you feel safe.
Yeah, I mean, alcohol, for a lot of people, it saves them. It saves. It's not the problem. It's my solution to the problem. The problem is how. Problem is how I feel inside. The problem is that I'm too sensitive in an environment, in an area that doesn't allow for sensitivity.
Do you feel like that's part of like why you grew into kind of this fight mode and this tougher clan? Do you feel like that was like subconsciously satisfying your toughness versus sensitive, like being sensitive?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, it's a way. Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of tough guys, and they have that. You know, the people. It's so funny. The people that come to my class that have the biggest crack open the most are the tough guys who are holding it all in.
I know. And then it's just like the pin breaks it.
It just cracks open the levee and they like bawl, which is what my experience was the first time I did it. So it's like the more you hold it in, the bigger the release, the bigger the experience.
Do you feel like it then, for an addict, does that become then addicting? Were you trying to like find that again every time?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. But the good news is like, the more I did breath work, the more it just cleared out all my stuff. I mean, it just healed so many layers inside of me. People think that they've done the work. I thought I did the work, and then I laid down and I did this thing, and it started stripping away all these layers from childhood up.
What do you mean you thought you did? Like, when are you talking about?
When I first started doing breath work, I had done therapy. I had done 12-step work. I had done everything out there, and I'm like, I've done all the work. And then I laid down into this breathing thing. And what I didn't realize is that so much trauma, so much shame, so much grief, it stores in your body. It stores in your nervous system.
Cellular nervous system.
Yeah. There's scientific facts now that prove that trauma is passed through the DNA. Nobody's disputing that anymore. And they see that with the grandkids of Holocaust survivors.
I know, isn't it so amazing?
And it's just so like, some people will be like, I didn't know why I had all this stuff. Could be my parents. My father has a lot of stuff that happened to him and his parents and their parents. And so it's passed down through the DNA.
Well, I see it a little bit. You know, my child's adopted. And so I see it sometimes because there's a few things that are very her that I know she's not picking up from behavior patterns from us.
Right.
You know, like certain like reactions, like sensitive reactions that I just know because it's not how I act or live. And it's interesting. I'm always like, where is she getting that from? Because it's like intense and it's clearly hers. And I'm just like, it's got to come. It's DNA. Like, it's hers. Like, but from who? Like, I can't figure it out, obviously, but it's like, it's really interesting. It's like so clear. There's something that at some point needs to be cleared out.
Yeah. It's like eye color. I mean, it's literally just passed down to the DNA. They've done studies with mice where they spray the cherry blossom spray and then they shock it. And then they spray the cherry blossom spray and they shock it. And then they just spray the spray and it has a reaction. And then that mouse has babies and they spray the cherry blossom spray. It's never been shocked and then has a reaction. Mm. 14 generations later, it's still responding to this cherry blossom spray where other mice are not. So there's, you know, studies that prove that mothers that were pregnant at 9/11, the babies are born with higher cortisol levels. And so...
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so all this kind of stuff that's passed on. And so I knew it was my parents' fault, but now now I really know. Now I can prove it.
Do you believe in like past lives, reincarnation?
I'm not that guy. I'm not very woo-woo.
I know, because I'm just curious with that idea. Like, are you then, and obviously we're not going to really get into this conversation because you're not that guy. Like, are you then specifically choosing this DNA path because of whatever it is you need to like... grow from? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. I tried. So my thing was when I found breathwork, it was so woo-woo. It was so new agey. But the experience, the technique, the experience I had was undeniable. And I healed so much from doing it on my own and doing it in classes and whatnot. And there was a realization that I had in that healing that if somebody did this in a way, somebody taught this in a way that wasn't all new agey and woo-woo, that they would have 250 people in the room and that they could help firefighters and policemen and housewives and normal people who would never go to these kind of classes.
Right.
Because when the class that I went to had five people in it.
How did you
it was
find
super,
it originally?
Super fucking woo-woo. You know, I went to Tony Robbins. I met Tony. He invited me to seminar. So I was wide open after that. And a couple people who didn't know each other. Two people who didn't know each other.
By the way, your posts on Tony Robbins are hilarious. You become like a 5-year-old kid.
Jumping up and down.
Oh my God. It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's but go ahead.
So two people who didn't know each other said, you need to go do breath work. And I was like, what the hell is breath work? And so I found this place in West LA that isn't there anymore. And I went to a class and it was fucking this fresh hell that I didn't know was available to me, you know, with like crystals and oils and sheepskin rugs. And I was like, oh my God. And people sharing all kinds of weird shit. And I laid down and I did this breath work technique and I cried and I released 30 years of emotional baggage and trauma in one class, in one session. And I felt connected to something that I'd never felt in my life. And it was as real as me wanting to kill somebody on the 405 freeway. It was undeniable.
And what do you feel like you were connecting to?
Oh, see, now I'm going to get woo-woo. Why are you trying to make me get woo-woo?
By the way, you are woo-woo. You just, you don't speak like it.
Yeah. So I felt like...
I know you well enough.
I don't know what you want to call it. The universe, God, whatever the hell you want to call it. It's funny because at some of the classes here at the Den, there was a guy, and I don't want to say he was a gangbanger, but he seemed to be gang affiliated. And he came up to me after class. He came to a couple classes and I could see he was having a big transformation, right? He was just fucking blown away by this breathing thing. And he came up to me after class and he goes, Can I talk to you for a second? He pulled me aside. He's like, I felt God in there. Oh. I felt the presence of God. He goes, I go, yeah, I understand. Like it is- and we had this like moment. And it was like, that's why I'm doing the work. And that's why I teach it in this way.
That but what did that feel like for you?
I want that guy in my class. I want that gangbanger. I want that tough. I had a tough firefighter captain in LA come not only my class here at the Den. And he shared, he's like, my wife said, you got to do something or you got to leave. And he did my workshop here at the Den and it changed him. And then he came to my teacher training and he's going to take it to firefighters.
I love that.
Yeah, I love that. So, yeah, I'm really, you know, teaching this in a way to get those type of people through the
door. You were the perfect person for it, too. I mean, look, I feel like you and I bonded over that from the beginning of it was the same reason, like, the Den came about. It's like there's this total misperception about meditation. Look, I can get totally woo-woo. Anyone who knows me or listens to this podcast knows I can be very woo-woo. But it doesn't have to be. It is just this beautiful offerings that everyone can clear some of their shit, like period.
Yeah.
And I feel like we always bonded over it and you are the perfect person to kind of attract those people. Cause that's, I mean, you exactly the person who's going to get sensitive is going to scream. And I think people are comfortable with that because they're the same way. Most yeah. people are like that.
Yeah. I've joked so many times at the Den here because I'll come in, I'll go, listen, I just took the 101 to the 405 to the fucking 10 to get here, the freeways in Los Angeles. And I almost choked somebody out over a parking space. But don't worry, now I'm going to put gratitude and love in your heart. So it's all good. You know, and that's just who I am.
In those moments, it's like you need the class just as much as the people you're teaching it
to. And here's the thing. People are like, wow, this guy's kind of like aggro and edgy. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't know what I was like before this. I've come a long way.
Right. That's true. So tell me, going back to that moment, like what was it? You felt God? You felt a presence? Like,
yeah.
Was it?
I felt connected to things that I've never felt connected. I felt connected to the universe, to nature, to everyone around me. I felt this beautiful, beautiful, undeniable connection. And I went home and my wife was like, you look like a different person. And, you know, I felt like a different person.
Talk about the idea for people of, you know, you can have this big break open moment, which is huge. And that just talk about what doing the work actually means, that it's not just one of those moments.
Yeah, that's an important distinction because people will come and they have this, they'll crack wide open and they'll release all this stuff. And they're like, that was amazing. And I'll see you next week or whatever. And then I don't see them again. And it's because when you have an opening, you have an expansion. And then what happens is you're vulnerable. And then you go home and you see everything or somebody says something. And I always joke, like, don't text or call any exes after class. Right.
Right.
So a lot of people don't want to go back there. They don't want to go there. People are scared to do the work.
Yeah.
They're scared to do the work. But here's the thing. It's like what they don't get is if they just did it consistently for a length of time, whether that's a month, 3 months, 6 months. I did it for a year, but I had a lot of shit. If they just do that consistently, if they just do the breathing and they make it into a practice, then all that stuff clears out. And then you just, when you lay down to breathe, you just get to gratitude and love. So now when I lay down and breathe, I just get to gratitude and love. Unless something comes up in my life, unless somebody dies or something happens or I'm stressed out or a lot of shit, then I lay down and I clear it right out, but I'm current. The problem is that people aren't walking around current. They're walking around filled up with all this past stuff. They're dragging around all these past experiences, and they have no idea that their past is holding them back from becoming the best version of themselves. You cannot step into the best version of yourself when you're carrying around resentment and anger and shame. It's affecting your relationship. It's affecting your career. It's affecting all your dreams. And so they have no idea because you're reacting. You're not doing this, or you are doing this as a result of your past, as a result of all the stuff you're doing. So if you can clear all that stuff out, now I can come to this business idea or this relationship with a clean slate, so to speak. And we're not doing that. Most people aren't doing that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I see that too. And it's also the, like you said, you have this opening and you become vulnerable. You know, people expect sometimes whatever version of this work it is, whether it's breath work, meditate, anything, they expect to always feel euphoric.
Yeah.
And you're like, but that's not it. Sometimes you might actually feel pretty shitty because you are uncovering some stuff and you are diving deep. And that's the beautiful part of the journey if you can embrace it that way, which a lot of people can't because it's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So how do you motivate people to like get through that?
It depends on what people's, the leverage, right? Like Tony Robbins talks about the leverage. Like I would tell, if someone had kids, I would be like, you know, this isn't for you. This is for your kids.
Right. That's a great one.
Yeah.
If they have kids.
If they have kids.
Right.
If they don't have kids, you got to find out what the leverage is for them, what they want, what they really, really want. What you want has to be more important.
Tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
It's so funny that you do that. I do that in my teacher training the whole time. I like something will come up and I'll just like start singing a song.
The
like,
problem is my references are old.
Yeah, me
I know,
too. The same thing. I was like, it takes two to make a thing go right. So yeah, you have to find the leverage. You know, the thing that you want has to be, you have to want it more than, you know, the pain. You have to be willing to go through the pain to get there. And it's like people will come and do a breathwork session, and sometimes it'll stir up some trauma from the past, and they go, this thing came up from my childhood that I didn't even want to think about. And it's like, well, that thing is there.
Right. Right.
That's not like, this didn't bring that thing there. Like it wants to clear. It needs to come out. It needs to clear.
Right.
And so you can't deny that it's there. It's time for it to clear.
It's so interesting how
people think they lock things away
and then they don't exist.
Yeah. And that's where a lot of health problems come in.
Yes. Cause I mean, it starts to physically manifest.
Yes.
But it is interesting because I think also people don't realize, they also feel like it's one journey. I'll do the work, and once I get to here, whatever that immediate goal is, I'm good.
Yeah.
And they don't realize like, okay, but then there's like a beautiful new one. You turn right, and then it's going to unfold other stuff. Like that stuff, you know, you're referring to, which I love, it's like you lock it down. It's there. It's like sometimes it's on so many layers you don't even know it's there. So you clear all these other layers first, and you get through that, and it's beautiful, and you feel lighter, and you feel like you got somewhere. But that other shit that was hiding so far, it's still there.
Yeah.
And at some point, it's going to have its pathway to clear out to be like, hi, deal with me. And it might be 5 years from the beginning of you starting to do the work, 10 years, one month.
You have no idea where it's coming.
I
was telling someone, I really am trying to spend amazing quality time with my children.
Yeah.
And so I signed up for this art class with my daughter where we're making clay unicorns, right? And so she's going to make the clay unicorn. And the lady's like, why don't you make one? And I started to make one. And I literally had it a fucking meltdown. And like, it wasn't obvious to anyone.
Did you come back to being that 12-year-old
yes,
kid?
Yes, it's exactly what happened. I started to get frustrated and have a meltdown. And I crushed my clay unicorn into a ball.
Magical enough.
And then I was just like, you know, let me just watch her and help her. It was just a weird moment. I was like 12 years old again. And you just don't know where that shit's going to come up for you.
So how's she doing? Because you said she embodies a lot of the same stuff you did.
Yeah.
How's she now doing with it? And what tools have you been giving her to like get through it?
Yeah, so she's doing great. I mean, I haven't seen that since, and she made a great unicorn and loved it. And then she made a beetle. I mean, it was beautiful. I think like I try and get her to do breath work, you know, to breathe through her nose. And one of the things that I discovered with kids is when they're having a meltdown, that they just need to be felt.
Yes.
Right? You just need, like for me, I read this book and it was like, they just need to be felt. They know that you're there. So my daughter would have a meltdown and go in a room, and then I would knock on the door and say, can I come in? And then I would go and I would just start scratching her back and just say, you know, I'm here, and just scratch her back, not even fucking say anything.
That's actually a beautiful, beautiful tip for a lot of people because it's giving you actually something to do.
Yeah. And then, you know, you can connect to the heart through the back. Like you put your palm on the back of the center. I would used to do this in private breathwork sessions and in classes where I would put my palm right in the center of someone's back and just leave it there or rub it a little bit and you connect right to the heart. So just be there and connect to her. And then when she calms down from scratching her back or rubbing her back, just say like, how did that make you feel? Like just letting her feelings be heard, you know, and letting her know that I hear her, I can feel her, I understand her. That's it. That's all she wants. That's all she needs.
Do you feel like because you feel like you weren't heard, like you were too sensitive, that stuff, do you feel like that's really helped you understand how to do this? Or did you have to work to get there because you too were repeating some of the...
Yeah. I had to work to get there because you don't know. Everybody thinks they're going to be this parent that they're going to do better than their parents.
But a lot of times we repeat it.
That's exactly what we do. Because how are you going to do better than your parents? What have you done differently?
Right. Who taught you differently?
Yeah, and exactly. And you're just unconsciously repeating the same patterns over and over again. And so unless you start consciously parenting, which is like getting aware of your own shit and doing something about it, you're actually turning your kid into the same thing. Or you're trying to get them to fulfill your unfulfilled dreams.
Do you think moving was kind of a catalyst for all this for you?
Yeah, moving helped a lot in a lot of different ways. I mean, I came to LA like everybody else with Hollywood dreams. And so...
And then you lost all your hair.
Yeah, I lost all my hair. And then, you know, a bunch of frustration around screenwriting for years and all getting really close. And, you know, Tom and I sold a show to E! That didn't get picked up and all kinds of stuff. So I've just had so many broken disappointment dreams, right? I mean, that's why my classes in LA here are so filled up. Like
everyone has the same broken dreams.
Yeah, everyone. Yeah. And so moving to Bend was just being able to just let go of that. And it's so funny because now I come back and I do this amazing stuff here and it's like, people love it. My classes are all sold out. My teacher trainings are all sold out.
Do you feel like when you still lived in LA, even when you were super successful and like breathwork was growing and you were part of this movement, do you feel like just because you were here, there was still a connection and element to this old dream of yours?
Yeah, still chasing it. It's so hard to let go. It's so hard to let go. And now I finally let go of it. I think the move helped me let go of it.
Is that because you could fill that part with other stuff because you had to? Like you weren't there? And it's like...
I just feel like... If there's something about being here, being around it, and that it's constantly, you're sucking yourself back into it.
Right.
Like you see it. You see the people who are doing it, who are successful at it. And you're like, well, they're no better than I am. They're not, you know what I mean? Like I've worked with so many celebrities and I'm like, how the fuck is this person so successful at this? Right. And so, but it's... Everybody's got their
thing.
Yeah.
Because you've also worked with a lot of celebrities who are struggling.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
and struggle you would never wish upon anybody.
Well, and I just didn't know that, like, this is what I was meant to do. I had to let go of those Hollywood dreams so I could step into this destiny, which is to help people, which is ultimately way more fulfilling than doing a movie or having a show or anything like that. Like when I do a class or I do a training or a retreat and people come up with tears in their eyes, hugging me, telling me I changed their life, that for me is way more fulfilling than if I did a movie.
Yeah.
So it just always goes back to like, I'm so grateful that I didn't get what I wanted.
Right.
Because what I wanted was so much less than what I have now.
And but that's, again, goes back to like what you said when you connected to whatever we want to call it, God, source, universe, right?
Yeah.
I feel like because then it becomes an element of trust.
Yes.
Right? Like for people to have ease in what they're getting or what they're not getting, there has to be an element of trust.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I always tell people, like, you don't know what's on the other side of doing all the hard work for yourself. And sometimes some things aren't meant to be for us. And if we just strip away all the stuff that we think we're supposed to have or think we're supposed to do, then there is something there for you that you may not anticipate or expect. And so just stripping away all that stuff was the key for me. There was a moment, and it's Tony Robbins, right? Like, I love Tony Robbins. So there was a moment in Tony Robbins where he's got us pulling these moments into our heart, moments of gratitude, moments of this. He had us do a future moment. And I never wanted kids my whole life. And then in this future moment, for some reason, I saw a little girl and a little boy, and I started to weep. And I didn't know I wanted kids. And then I did in that moment. It literally shifted for me in that moment. And I went back and I told my wife, I was like, I think I want children. And she's like, what? What happened to Tony Robbins? And, you know, now I have children that look exactly like that moment. It's crazy. It's super woo-hoo weird.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're woo-woo.
I know.
I'm just going to say it here.
And it's been the greatest source of love, the greatest source of fulfillment. It's been my greatest gift. And just to be a dad. Like,
it feels like it's like been this missing part of like your growth.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it comes back to too, like forgiving my dad for his misgivings and his shortcomings so that I can be a better dad.
Right. Are your parents still alive?
Yeah, still alive.
Has it changed your relationship with
Hopefully
them?
They don't listen to this podcast.
I won't send it to them.
So it's like, you know, I was so mad at my dad for years for some of the stuff that he did wrong. And he did some stuff wrong, you know, some inappropriate stuff that he would never own. And that's part of that transformational letter workshop that I used to do with people, right? If we have to wait for people to give us what we want, what we need, then we're screwed. Mm-hmm. So this thing, this transformational letter I created with breath work gives you what you need from that person without even having to talk to that person. And at one point too, I just wrote everything my dad did right because he did a lot of stuff right and he was a good dad.
And it goes back to how we started this conversation of like people are whole.
Yeah.
There's like good and there's bad.
Yeah.
So it was nice that you could lean into some of the good.
Yeah. And he really did the best that he could, you know, he really did the best that he could raising me and he gave a lot of love and he did it, you know, and he did a lot of stupid shit too, you know? And so just knowing that now as a dad, like, I'm not going to be perfect as a dad.
No.
And I hope that if I make a mistake, that my children forgive me.
So our first time we did our 21-day challenge, it was such a huge success. I'm really excited to announce our next one. Starting March 1st, we're going to do our global 21-day challenge. Chandresh Bardwaj is leading it, and it is finding your source of happiness. This is great because you can go to denanywhere.com, sign up today to make sure that starting March 1st, you get a meditation delivered into your inbox every single day for 21 days. And these are meditations you can have for ever. So please join us again starting March 1st, but join today. Go to denanywhere.com and join our 21-day challenge. Hey guys, it's time to announce our next Den Talks Live. Get your tickets. Come in. They are always such fun events. I promise you the energy is always great when we do these live. Plus you get a little, you know, nibbles and drinks and always fun takeaways. So our next one is soulmates. I feel like we get so many questions about this. And so we are going to talk about it and dive into it. And it's a panel. So we're going to get multiple point of views because I think that's really important when we're talking about soulmates. We have Ryan Weiss, who's always been an amazing guest. We have Catherine Woodward Thomas, the author of Conscious Uncoupling. And we have Jill Willard, who's an intuitive medium, and they all have very different points of view on soulmates. So this way we can discuss, are they actually a thing? Do they exist? If they do, how can you attract them? What does a soulmate really mean? Can a soulmate be a family member? Does it have to be a partner or a lover? So there are so many angles, not to mention the questions you guys are going to ask. So go to denmeditation.com or dentalkspodcast.com and reserve your spot so you can come February 29th at La Brea Soulmates. Hey guys, a quick word from our sponsor, Liquid IV. They have been a savior for me because you guys probably all hear me talk about this on the podcast that I am horrible at drinking water. I really am. And what you probably don't even realize, it's the winter months now. We get even more dehydrated because we don't even notice the symptoms. So when you're cold, it just makes it harder to spot. So thankfully, these guys came around because the beautiful thing is what I would have to drink for 2 to 3 bottles of water, now I just have to do one. And it tastes good. So they have 3 amazing flavors and you can pick one and you just put it in 16 ounces of water and it tastes great. So for me, who just struggles with drinking water, this has actually made the experience so much more enjoyable. And not only that, it's providing 5 essential vitamins, more vitamin C. So in the winter with flu season, it has really helped keep me healthier. So now, here's the fun stuff. You get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and you use the code DENTALKS at checkout. Now, let's make that all caps. DENTALKS, all caps. That's 25% off anything that you order from Liquid IV's website. That's liquidiv.com, promo code DENTALKS. So don't wait. Go there now and start properly hydrating right this moment. Also, I mean, what a... It's funny, I keep just going back to empowerment, and I feel like so much of breath work and how, especially how you teach it, is really empowerment. It's yeah. like knowing the power is in there, and you're kind of cultivating it like through the breath, and it helps give you clarity, it helps you have breakthroughs, it helps you release, like all these things. And it's empowerment of take the reins. I mean, again, not to bring it back to Kobe, but it's so omnipresent right now. That's been, you know, everyone's taking that message of like, hold on to your loved ones closer. And of course, I get it.
Yeah.
But like the message that kept coming to me was like, oh my God, shut the fuck up and just start doing your shit.
Right.
Because that's who he was. He was like, it's you, you're on the court, you make it happen. And part of me was like, if anything of this timeline of showing you, it's like, stop complaining about your parents. It doesn't mean they didn't fuck you up, but now what?
Totally.
What are you going to do about it? Like, what's your change you're going to do? Like, yes, that happened to you in your past, and it's awful, and it has really made it difficult and impossible for you to do X, Y, and Z, but now what are you going to do about it? Like,
yeah.
how can we stop? And I hate saying the word wallow, because some people be like, how dare you? And I know some things are atrocious that happen to people, but like you said, you can sit around for your entire lifetime waiting for the fairy dust to come and shift it for you. The only thing that's going to shift it for you is you.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's like, I feel like people don't, A, think they have the power to do that. B, sometimes they don't want to do it because they'd rather have the fairy dust or that person or right. that thing change for them. So speak a little bit to that, because I feel like that's so much of what you do.
Yeah. Listen, people want to blame their parents or other people so that they don't have to do the work, right?
right?
Your problems may be because of other people. They may have other people's names on them,
yep.
but your solution has your name on it.
Well, I love that.
And so, Colby was Colby was really known for his work ethic.
Yeah.
Colby worked his ass off the court and on the court.
Yeah.
So that comes back to like, just do the fucking work
yeah.
on yourself, right? If you can't sit there, you like hoping that something's going to change, because like, the hope is going to die eventually. You have to get active. You have to take fucking action to change your life. Stop waiting for something or someone to show up or something to happen to change your fucking life. If you're, you know, if you're waiting to give love to yourself till you lose, if you're waiting to lose weight to give love to yourself, or you're
not
waiting,
gonna happen.
If you're waiting for your career, this big career moment to happen, to love yourself, or you're waiting for somebody else to show up and love you before you love yourself, then you waste your fucking life.
Right, it's like you've got the wrong order.
Yeah, stop wasting your fucking life waiting for something or someone to happen to you to start loving yourself and start making a choice to start loving yourself in this moment. And loving yourself means showing up and doing the hard work. People think, I say this in everything, it's a bubble bath, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a fucking bubble bath. I mean, yes, a bubble bath can be there, but loving yourself is showing up and doing the uncomfortable work, being willing to do the shit you don't want to do that you know is going to make you better. I think it's Les Brown that says this: if you do what's easy all the time, then life will get really hard. But if you do what's hard, then life starts to get easy.
Ooh.
And if keep doing the hard work, there's very little that makes me uncomfortable at this point, because I've gone through so much discomfort. I'm willing to step in the discomfort. I'm like, what can I do that's going to make me fucking uncomfortable? Because I need to grow more.
I was going to say, it's fine. I was about to jump in and say, I feel like me too, because you kind of almost start to really love that part of like the discomfort, because you know where it brings you. You've seen the other side so many times
yeah.
that you know it's just better and more enlightening or more informative, whatever it is for you, that the discomfort actually weirdly becomes pleasurable in some ways.
Yeah.
It's like, I know I can feel it when I'm in a moment of transformation. I'm like, oh shit, time to like do some work. And like when I sit down in my own practice and I switch it up a little bit to target whatever that is, and it might be, it's surprising. Whatever comes up becomes surprising, and it might not be great, but like, I'm so okay sitting in it because I know, I'm like, this is interesting. I'm curious to know where this is taking me.
Yeah.
And I know it's taking me somewhere, and I have a trust in that now, versus maybe in the past it might have been like, what the fuck, what's happening? Now it's like, oh, I know if I let this happen, I'm getting somewhere. I have no clue where that is, but I know it's somewhere better.
Yeah. I mean, that's how you become a better mom. That's how you become a better teacher, a better wife, better whatever, is you show up and do the uncomfortable
yeah.
stuff. Like, I want to be the best breathwork teacher on the planet. And so I have to keep stepping into that discomfort to grow, to become a better teacher. I just did a training last weekend, and it's like, between that training and the training before that, I did Tony Robbins. I did a Ho'oponopono certification. You know what I mean? I did a bunch of, I'm like,
well, so you're certified in that.
Well, I mean, it was like,
then you better remember the order.
Yeah, I know. Well, they changed the order from like, it's not exact, like one.
I'm kidding.
Person says it this way and one person says it that way. It's not, but yeah, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's just, I keep trying to find new things. Like, what can I do next? Like, what else is out there?
Talk to me about what, when you were in the thick of it, like you got sober. And again, please listen to the first episode because the whole like stripper roommate, like getting pulled over. I mean, his actual moment of change where the last time you had a drink is it's intense, like from stabbings to fights, almost getting pulled over to your stripper roommate, basically being like, get your shit together. It's a great story. So please go back and listen. But from that moment, what do you remember being either something that was said to you or a moment? What do you remember something that got you, that you heard? Because I feel like a lot of times like people talk and talk and talk, and then it's just something you resonate with that you can hear. What do you feel like you first heard that actually made you go, yeah?
It's so hard to pinpoint because, you know, I had a couple bottoms, and but it's never really your bottom. People say it's your bottom when you stop digging, right? But, you know, you think that this is going to be your bottom. Like you see somebody get in a car crash and you think like, why can't they get sober after that? Or like all these different horrible things that should be your bottom. They lose their wife and their family and it's not. But I really have, and I'm coming up on 20 years of sobriety.
Congratulations.
Which is exciting. I really think now that the bottom is when you turn around and ask for help, because nothing changes until you ask for help. You can't do it on your own. I just haven't seen anyone be successful on their own, especially long-term sobriety. So the bottom is like, okay, lots of things will happen to you that should be your bottom, but when you finally, something happens to you, whether it's external conflict, you get in a car accident, you lose your job, your wife leaves you, whatever, or internal conflict, which is, I just fucking hate myself and I hate my life and I don't want to live like this, which is a lot of celebrities that I've worked with because they don't lose all their shit, right? So that's internal conflict. They have to have something inside. I think it's when somebody just says, I need help. And that's when you can start to change. That's literally the moment.
What do you think it is about that? That is the catalyst. Why?
Why?
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, it's different for everyone. You know, you can't, it's different inside of everyone. It's like so many people have crossed invisible lines inside of themselves. So they said they would never do this or they would never do that. And then they do that and they just keep going. And now they've got more shame. Right, comes back to the shame. They get more shame, and then you need to use more drugs or more alcohol or whatever, more food to cover that shame up. And you know, the pain becomes so great, or it's just one weird thing that just does it, and you're just like, okay, because people will for years and years and years try and get sober, and then suddenly it just works.
What can someone do who's on the outside?
Ask for help. I mean, ask for help. I'm a big proponent of 12-step recovery programs, you know, all the anonymous programs. I'm huge. I think they work. You know, people might say that, oh, they know a person who went to that and this person, it didn't work for this person, or this person's in, you know, 12-step and they're a jerk or whatever. It's like the programs aren't the people. The programs are the step and the books and all that kind of stuff. And I think that that stuff really works. I know that it works. It's really the only thing I've seen work long term. So if you, you know, ask for help and get help, it's there. You know, but you know, I've talked to so many people that are like, oh, I tried 12-step, I tried that, and it didn't work. And it's like, well, did you do this, this, and this? Did you work all the steps? Did you have a sponsor? You know what I mean? I ask them the questions, and I already know the answer before I even ask them. Because when you do all that stuff, and then most importantly, you turn around and help somebody else, now you're in it, right? Because really helping other people is the key. It's the key.
How do you, especially, I mean, are you still a sober coach or no?
I have a sober coaching business, sober companion business. I still do it. I don't go out myself. I have like lots of people on my roster that I would send. So I'll get a call for somebody. And the sober coaching thing is like basically in place of rehab or instead of rehab, because rehab is a bubble. Right, where it's easy to stay sober in a place for 30 days with these other people, and they got people.
Right, it's a little paradise. Sobriety.
It's like you take a tree that's sick in its environment, and then you pull it out of that sick environment, and you put it into a rehab, and you nurse it back to health. And then what do? You put it back in that sick environment. Of course, it's going to go back to drinking or using drugs.
Right.
So what I do is I send somebody to go live with that person to coach them and get them sober and take them to 12-step and get them a healthy, sober lifestyle in their thing.
Living in their life.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's not cheap. It's an expensive thing. It's usually, it started out just for rock stars and actors, like when rock stars would come out of rehab and they go on the road. And now it's like rock stars and actors and CEOs and rich kids, because, you know, insurance isn't going to pay for it, unfortunately. So it's all out of pocket. And it's expensive to have somebody come live with you in your life.
Of course. It's a privilege.
Yeah.
But so you've seen a lot of shit.
Yeah.
And you've dealt with a lot of grief. And I know we talked a little bit on the first one too of how, you know, you, I mean, even when you were a kid, I mean, again, there were stabbings. You've lost a couple friends.
I've lost a lot of friends.
You've lost a lot of friends. I mean, you've...
I lost seven close friends before I was 22.
I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
So when you were drinking, obviously that's one way to deal with grief. How have you found, how do you deal with grief now that you're sober?
It's a great question. Breath work is the key, because grief gets stuck in the lungs. And we don't, we just like kind of relive it and ruminate on it and keep, and it comes out of nowhere. It, you know, those feelings can come out of nowhere and just take over when you least expect it. And so if you can lay down and you can breathe, you can start to process and allow some of the grief. When that guy that I sponsored committed suicide, you know, I sponsored him for 10 years. And I just had so much pain and so much grief around it. And I felt responsible for him. And I couldn't get past it.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you...
So,
I mean, you know you're not. You know...
Right, I know.
How do you detangle that?
So this is where the transformational letter was born out of. I wrote a letter to him saying everything I wanted to say, everything I needed to say, everything I couldn't say because he's not here. And then, this is the key, I wrote a letter back from him, saying everything I wanted him to say to me, everything he couldn't say to me. And that really told me what I was trying to get.
How hard and was then writing that letter back?
It's painful. I mean, I've done this workshop
in the den so many times,
and it's incredible. And I've had so many people come up to me and be like, that workshop changed my life. I had a therapist in Beverly Hills for $500 an hour for 10 years, and I could never heal the issue with my dad leaving when I was 8. And then I did that transformational workshop with you, and it was gone. And it's been good ever since. So that's in this 5-day emotional detox course that I created. That course is a combination of all the den workshops that I did, right? The affirmation workshop and the transformational letter and the, I call it the legacy or the eulogy workshop, and also the love letter. So it's like all these workshops I did at the den combined with breath work. And if you did that 5-day emotional detox, it would be like a lifetime of therapy in five days.
Oh my God, it's amazing. You guys can go to denanywhere.com and they're all there, including a certifications, which we'll talk about more too. And we're going to do a promo code for everyone too,
yes,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
Put in den30 and you get 30% off. And this is stuff you have in your inbox forever. So, I mean, this is an amazing
deal. I have people emailing me and messaging me from all over the world and saying these incredible things about the, you know, this 5-day detox. I'm looking for it right now. This guy posted on Facebook the other night, and I found it so, I was so moved by it.
I love that it was born from this experience of trying to process your grief and your take yourself out of someone else's story.
So this guy commented after doing the detox. He said, "My wife bought this for me as a birthday present. I just have completed it for the first time. I can attest to the absolute effectiveness for me. For 45 years, I have been emotionally straitjacketed by abusive parenting and religion in my childhood. I was depressed and my functioning had gotten so low I could barely respond to others. I committed to the breath work and the exercises aggressively. The very first time I did breath work, I felt transformed physically, emotionally, and mentally. My posture has improved. My emotional well-being has radically transformed. My cognitive functioning has become razor sharp. My being is whole, and I am now able to function as an adult in ways I have never been able. My wife says I seem 10 feet tall and she does not recognize me. I have absolute confidence where I used to have none. My wife says I no longer snore. My sexual virality is back. The single most effective tool I have ever encountered for overcoming self-doubt and fear. I will never stop doing it."
I mean, that is probably the most amazing review you could get.
I know. It's,
I mean,
just
it really,
like,
got every angle.
I was amazing. I was like, wow. And that, but like, I have hundreds of those from people all over the planet, like which is crazy.
I love that. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Yeah.
You guys, if you have never experienced breath work, you absolutely have to. And like now you can do it online also, or go to say it really is. I remember the first time I did it was with you too.
Yeah.
And it's, and
I remember you doing it. I can still see you doing it years ago. Like you were going for it hard. I was like, wow, she's going for it hard.
Yeah. Well, you told me what to do. I did it. I felt like I was in there. Same thing. It's like, you're there, do it.
Yeah.
And I remember, and I've told this story on here before too, what ended up coming up at the end for me, I got this overwhelming sense of sadness of this thing that had happened in my life that I totally thought I'd forgiven myself for. And I thought I'd moved on. And I just remember going, oh, shit. Like, you clearly still have stuff to deal with on that. Like, I had just totally thought it was good. But it's so what came up for me at the end of that class. And I remember, like, crying and being like, oh, yeah, you still haven't forgiven yourself for that. You still think you're an asshole.
Yeah, we try to make it good somehow in our mind, right? It's like when something really painful happens or whatever it is, we find a way around it. Like the mind will literally forget things, that traumatic things that happen to us, just to protect us so that we can carry on and go on with our lives.
I believe that.
But the body doesn't forget.
I agree with that too.
And so at some point, you're going to need to process that out, or it's going to come out in some way that's not good, and some sort of health issue or, you know, whatever. So everybody thinks they've dealt with all their shit, but they haven't.
But here's what's so great about you, and like before we get to the four U's, it's like if you can do it, like you're such a great example that way though. It's like literally drinking, drugs, stabbing, fights, like if you can turn your life around, again, crushed dreams.
Yeah.
We talked a lot on the first one too. He used to be super vain and like obsessed with your looks and then also got alopecia. I mean, like you kept being given everything until you finally were ready to actually learn the self-love. Like it was very clear like what you were being given until you were forced to deal with it.
Yeah.
But it's like to anyone who's like, I can't, whatever, the doubt, the self-doubting, the self-loathing, it's like you were such a beautiful example of how you can come out on the other side. And you're still going to be you. Like, you're still going to have your personality. You're still going to be you. No one's trying to make you into this, like, woo-woo, like, hippy-dippy person.
It doesn't matter, like, what you've done, what you've done to other people, what's been done to you, what you've been through, what your education is, what your, you know, ethnicity is. None of that matters. If you want to heal, if you want to get better, the only thing that matters is that you're willing to show up and do the work.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all you need. That's all you need to do is just have a willingness to show up and do the work and love yourself. And like, I've been saying this a lot lately. I keep saying, you know, work harder on yourself, but don't be harder on yourself. Just don't be harder on yourself. Because that's the thing we do is we work hard on ourselves and then something doesn't work out or we screw something up and then we beat ourselves up. That defeats the whole fucking purpose.
I know. I had a student who kept coming to class and he made this very tough choice. Like he was trying to manifest something and it was very specific. And I know that's, people say to be that specific. I don't. I have different opinions on it. But you know, people do say that, like, be very specific. And it was like winning this one thing. And I would feel bad for him because he would come in and some days he would just be like, I'm off my course. I'm like, no, but you're doing the work. This is like what's so beautiful about what you're doing. Don't forget that. Just because this day is not going this way or that way, like, you're learning, you're processing, like, you're in it. Like, that's what you should be patting yourself on the back for, not because you didn't get this in that moment or that in that moment. And I kept trying to warn him too. I'm like, and if you don't get that thing, maybe it's not supposed to be yours. So don't put like, I was nervous that, God forbid, it doesn't happen, then the work just totally stops because it feels like, well, what's the point? That's what I was going for.
There is no fucking thing to get.
Exactly. Well, I know
there
that.
Is no thing
so
to
that's
get.
That's why I was nervous.
I mean, listen, I've worked with 4 Oscar winners. We got one sitting right over here, right? So we worked with 4.
Our star Tom.
Yeah, our star Tom. 4 Oscar winners, couple Grammy winners, gold medalists, Olympic gold medalists. And it's like, that's the one of the most painful things that can happen to you is because you think when I get this thing, this trophy, this thing, now I'm going to be happy. Now I'm going to be complete. Now I'm going to be whole. And that doesn't fill this empty hole inside of you that says I'm not enough.
Well, that's a little bit my problem with certain manifestation. Like, you know, there's a lot about manifestation out there right now because that's what everybody wants us to create. Mm. And I do believe you can create your own future just differently than I get nervous when people are telling people, okay, you want it exactly how you want it, that then they're locking themselves into what they think they're supposed to have versus being open to where they're going to be taken.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm like, I get a little bit wonky on it.
It almost never comes the way you think it's supposed to come.
No, because if we knew everything, life would be a lot easier. Well, period.
If we knew everything, life would be boring as fuck.
True. I know some of us would just have to cause drama. Right? I mean, it's just innate in us.
But yeah, I mean, we just don't. It's like it almost never comes the way you want it to, and or the way you think it's going to. And if it does, then you're disappointed when something doesn't work out later.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That used to be, I mean, Tom might appreciate that story. That used to be the joke with me and my old boss at Sony. Because we were opposites. I might have told this the last time, I don't remember. We were opposites, loved each other, Zach. And he used to always be like, so really, you have no 5-year, 10-year plan? I'm like, my brain doesn't operate that way. No, I take jobs where I feel like I'm going to be excited, I'm going to learn, and people I want to work with, and I just feel like it's going to take me where I'm supposed to. I always had that notion. So I was the weirdo in entertainment. And he was like, I just can't not have a 10-year plan. How do you not have a 10-year plan? Like, yeah. I have to be working towards this. How do you motivate to do things? And we used to laugh about it, how we were just wired so differently. And I used to tell him, I'm like, but look, you might be missing some really great stuff that you're supposed to do because you think you're supposed to do it. He's like, you're crazy. I mean, yeah. He was also the one who offered me a job right after my laugh job ended. And I was like, and I paused and he's like, ugh, you're going to take a break, aren't you? You're so annoying. Like in a really sweet way. Like he knew like, that's your personality. Yeah. I could never do that. And it was just, but it was that same feeling. And it used to weird people out in entertainment because there was a lot of like, I either want to run a network or I want to run a studio. And that was just what you were aiming for. And I just never had that. My thing was always like, oh, I don't know. Maybe I'll do that. Maybe I won't. We'll see what I'm supposed to do. And I'm just going to keep working with people I like. And for that, I actually feel like I had some really great jobs because I worked with people I loved. But it was always more, I don't know. I also just assumed it's funny. I said this in an interview after college. When I was interviewing college, someone asked me what I was going to do in 20 years or something, which again, my brain doesn't compute. And I said, probably, and it's funny because look what I'm doing, probably a job that doesn't exist that combines everything that I've done up to that point.
Yeah.
And the woman was like, huh? And basically, I never got a call back on that interview. She was like, what the fuck? Like, do you want to be a buyer for Bloomingdale's or not? Like,
right.
But that was my answer after college. I'm like, I'm going to guess, really? Are you asking me about 20 years? It probably doesn't exist now. And I probably don't even know it's something I want to do, and I'm just going to see where, and like, it was like mind-blowing for some people, but that's just always how I felt. Like, I don't want to not end up in an amazing place because I don't know about it yet.
Yeah. I'm one of those 5-year, 10-year plan people.
Yeah, it's a personality
who has
thing.
Completely let go of it.
Ooh.
Because none of that has worked out. Not one fucking thing.
Right.
Not one thing has worked out. And everything that I have in my life today that's amazing didn't even exist in my brain. Like, I didn't even know breathwork existed 8 years ago,
exactly.
Right? I didn't want kids, right? Everything that's beautiful, everything that's amazing in my life did not exist. And so I want to know what else is out there that I didn't know, that I don't know exists right now.
That's
for
exactly
me.
Right. That's how I felt. So, I was like,
so yeah, I would love to do a book one day, but someone had a horrible book deal that I said, that's the worst book deal ever. No, thank you. But I would love to do a book, but that's going to maybe present itself or it's not going to present itself.
It will.
I would love to do a documentary. Maybe it'll present itself. Maybe it won't.
That will for sure present itself.
So we'll see. But like, I have these,
like, oh, I've become I have these, here. That's happening. Maybe that.
So I have these great things that I would love to do, but right now I'm just going, yes, let someone call. I'm getting all these calls and opportunities to do other people's events, classes at different events like the Bulletproof Upgrade Labs or Panache Desai and all these different
Amazing.
Events. And I go and I say, yes, if it feels good. I'm like literally tuning in. This is woo-woo now. I'm tuning
He's
in to like...
guys. He's woo-woo.
No, it's just like, here's the thing. At our base, we're animals. And we have an intuition, just like an animal's start to stir when there's an earthquake coming, mm-hmm. right? They know there's something coming. When you're talking to someone or you're with somebody, if you really tune in, I keep pointing at my stomach. You can't see it on the podcast, but like that's where your intuition is. That's where it lies. And it's like, I feel good about this person. I don't feel good about this person. I feel good about this opportunity. I don't feel good about this opportunity. Instead of your head just taking over and going like, well, lots of people are going to be there and da da da. And there's a lot of times people trying to take advantage of me. They want me to come do something for free. There's no exchange. They're getting all this stuff and I'm getting nothing.
Right.
And that happens a lot.
Still?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just a higher level. It's right. still fucking happening.
I know.
People it like, never stops.
Don't you love how people like slyly put it in
yeah.
as if it's like you're not going to notice it?
Yeah.
I always
it's
say
so
that
funny.
They're like, you know, you come and do this because we're going to have so many people here that don't know your work yet.
Yeah.
And you're like, come on.
Yeah. That's exactly how it's presented. And it's just like, oh, God, give me. There needs to be an exchange. Like, make it. You're charging $4,000 a ticket and you don't want to pay me anything.
That happened to me once with a woman, and it's a much smaller scale. of wanting to set up a private for her team, which we do all the time and we charge people for all the time. And she kept trying to pitch me every reason why it should be free. And I actually stuck, because usually I'm like, I can be a softie. I was like, I just don't know what to tell you. Like, this is someone's time and this is what we charge. And the person worked in the same business. So I was like, I know you put on events too, so you understand that there's a cost that comes with these. I've already gone to my lowest price for you. And she just kept going. And I just, honestly, I was proud of myself. I kept holding firm. And we eventually actually did it. She had a great experience. But I just remember being like, well, I don't understand. Why does it feel like you should get, why is this something that it's going to cost me money to do that for you.
I know.
So why do you feel like I should?
There's no exchange. Not always, because Tony Robbins, I met him and he invited me to this thing and it changed my life. But I dug in. I played full out. But a lot of people, I've comped people for certain things.
Of course.
And I've comped, like, I'll give you a great example. Two of my cousins that I love to death both reached out for help. And I sent them the course, right?
Right.
And I just happened to, and this was months and months ago, I happened to look the other day. Neither one of them, they haven't even fucking opened it. You know what I mean? And so I used to, at the Den and this other studio that I used to teach at, there'd be like two people in the room, one or two people who weren't doing the breath work. And then I would go to the front and I'd be like, did they come in on a guest pass or did their friend buy their class? And they'd go, yeah, they absolutely did.
Interesting. Yeah, it's like, so if it was free, they didn't feel like they had to put in the work.
You don't value. You don't value what's free. The more you pay it, like when I was doing private sessions, I was charging a shit ton of money. And if you pay a shit ton of money, you do the work.
Right.
You're really going
like
to listen
to
that
get
person.
Get out of it. Yeah. Right, what I put in.
But if somebody bought it for somebody, I would find that they maybe wouldn't work as hard, or they wouldn't really do it, or that, you know, whatever.
Isn't that so insane? Like our relationship to money. It's fascinating.
It is. You know, listen, I went to some of my students' class in Bend, Oregon, and they were like, "Oh, you don't have to pay." And I'm like, "I absolutely have to pay because I won't fucking do the work."
And also, as a teacher, you know, you're trying to support.
Of course.
You get it. It's like you're supporting someone new who's growing.
Of course. It's for everyone.
But by the way, good for them for saying that you should come for free also out of respect. That's also a nice thing.
Yeah, but I want to pay. I mean,
I'm with you too. Whenever my friends like start a business now, they're like, I'll just send you stuff. I'm like, oh, if anyone understands, let me please buy the product from you. Like, let me do that for you.
Yeah.
You understand. It's hard.
Yeah. If you don't, you're not going to do the work.
Yeah.
It's just the way it works.
Let's do some for yous because I've already had you. Oh my God. I didn't even realize the time. I love talking to you.
Oh, so sweet.
I do. And I don't get you. I mean, he used to live here. So I used to have you. Remember, sometimes we would be on the phone for like to talk about once. And then we would just start babbling about whatever was going on for a long time. Yeah. I remember being in the car talking to you like many times. Okay. First thing you do when you wake up?
I go pee pee. And then I go and I stretch and I do a handful of, some of them are like yoga stretches, down dog, squat pose, and cat cow. And then I go
into a little cat cow.
I go into like a little prayer pose. I call it a surrender. And I just say kind of a prayer and I ask, you know, God, the universe, whatever, to keep my kids safe, to protect my family. That's it. That's all I ask for every day.
He's breaking again.
Yeah, because, you know, we don't know, right? So
we don't know.
So I ask for that, and then I'll do some type of breath, connected breath. Like, so I might just be 20 connected breaths. It might be 3 sets of 30 with a breath hold. It might be a full breathwork session. And then I'll sit on the pillow. I'll get to the meditation pillow, and I'll sit there from anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes.
How long does this whole...
It's about 30 minutes, the whole thing. And then I get after the coffee, and I get to work. And the work is usually, I try to do something creative first because I feel like you have like really an hour to 2 hours of creativity in you, and it's best first thing in the morning. And I get up, this is crazy, I get up at like 3:30, 4 in the morning now.
It's funny, I was doing that too, naturally.
Yeah,
you
me
set
too.
Your alarm?
Nope,
naturally,
no
I was
alarm.
Doing it, and then I got that fucking flu that went around, and I'm like, I'm 4 weeks out, and I'm finally starting to feel like myself again.
Well, the Tony Robbins thing threw that all off, because he has you up till 3 a.m.
Oh, so yeah. You
jumping
sleep.
Up and down, it's 40 degrees in the room. I mean, it's insane. People are in
like
there.
Succumb.
They're in there like coats and parkas and gloves. I mean, it was insane.
I'd be miserable.
Yeah, it was. I hate being cold too, and I was kind
of
miserable.
No hair.
Yeah, it makes it 10 times worse. So, yeah. So then I get to work, but I don't have an alarm anymore. And it's funny because I was a personal trainer for I don't even know 20 years or something, and I had to get up super early, and I hated it. And I'm like, someday I'm not gonna have to get up early.
Now you
and
do.
I don't have to get up early, but I do. Because I want to get all this stuff done before my kids get up.
Me too.
I want to connect with my kids before they leave, or, you know, whatever. Before my daughter leaves for school, or my son leaves. So I spend some time connecting with my children. They wake up around 7, 7:30, and that's really nice. And then I go back to work for a couple more hours. And whatever it is. I mean, I'm running a couple businesses.
So. I know. It's insane. What's a surprising hobby of yours?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, so I love to choke people unconscious if I can. And then the other hobby that I've never said on a podcast or anywhere is I'm really into architecture and design. And so right now is the first thing I've ever gotten to design. I'm redoing a bathroom in my house, and I'm super...
Are you loving it?
I'm hating the construction process because it's been a total nightmare. As people can understand, and everything has gone wrong that can go wrong, but I'm really excited to see the end result. So I love the beautiful walls in the den. I was showing Tom this, the brick, and that's so beautiful, designed it. You did such an amazing job.
I love that shit too.
Yeah, it's so much fun, right? And to pick it and to see it come to life, like your vision, that's exciting, hobby. And I think those are probably the two.
What's a current obsession?
Oh, that's a good question. A current obsession is cold therapy. I've been doing the cold stuff. Like,
is it even colder for you because you don't have hair?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know what to compare it to because I didn't do it when I had hair.
I have to do that cold stuff. I'm still...
I resisted it for so long. I'll tell you a good way to do it is to get in the sauna first. So to sit in the sauna for half an hour.
So you want the cold.
Yeah, and then it's easier. It's easier to jump in it. And the contrast from the sauna to the cold is actually really good for you. Or to find a place that has the hold and the hot and the cold right next to each other and go back and forth. That's how I started.
Because even the cold showers, which in LA you're never truly taking a cold shower, I still can't do.
Listen, the cold shower in Oregon is a real...
It's an actual cold shower,
yeah, it's
right.
So cold. It comes out in the wintertime. It comes out at like 48 degrees if you go full cold. And this new shower that I'm doing, the shower head is like the size of a pizza box. so that it's not just touching one part of your body.
Oh, you'll be rained on.
Yeah.
I try. And even knowing, I'm like, it's not that bad. It's Los Angeles. It's never going to be that. And I'm literally like, the toe goes in, the arm goes in. It's like the slow. And then I'll be doing like these weird, like, okay, I can do my head now. I'm just like,
I think
it's, hard
that it's
for me.
Easier.
I'll get better.
Before I could do the cold shower, I could actually do the cold immersion where you really get in a tub.
Do you just do it fast?
Yeah, just sit right in there and get right to your neck and then just start breathing. Just long exhales to just.
How long do you stay?
I got up to 12 minutes in a 50 degrees. So I would get in there, but I started going back and forth. I like 5 minutes in, 5 minutes warm, but I would get in there and just go long exhales. And what I discovered is the first 2 minutes is absolute hell. Like everything, like my nipples felt like they were on fire and everything hurt. And I was like, oh my God. But then after 2 minutes, it all goes away and you're just fine.
You're numb.
Yeah. And you just focus on your meditation and your breathing and you really are, puts you in the moment.
Have you floated?
I have a float tank in my house.
In your house?
Yeah, I have a sensory deprivation tank.
I feel like
in my
I
head.
Knew that.
Yeah, I love it. It's my wife
like
will be like, "You're
too.
Being a jerk. Go in the tank," and I'll go in the tank, and that'll put me into a deep, deep, deep
meditation.
Well,
that's what I was gonna say. Like, what do you feel like the difference? Like, because you were saying you can actually like disappear into deep meditation when you're in a cold bath.
In the tank, even better.
No, I know.
I have like a mini spa in my house right now.
Seriously, should we all just go stay at your house for a little bit? What's happening? You should charge for this.
Yeah. So that's been my dream, is to like have all these things in my house because it's self-care. I mean, that's what I love. So I have a float tank. I have a sauna. I'm redoing the bathroom to make it into this spa-like bathroom. This is where my money goes to like... to these things to take care of myself. Because when I'm doing all those things, I'm a great dad. I'm a great husband, right? I'm a great friend and like I'm a great teacher. But when I'm not doing those things, I start to become a fucking asshole again. I literally can just slip right back into it. And so I have to do all this work to take care of myself and to become the best version of me on a daily basis.
How long do you float for?
About an hour. Yeah. I floated here yesterday in town at this place called Paws. They reached out to me. And
so here's my question.
Yeah.
And I don't want you to say ill of anywhere. Like, because I looked and it almost seemed too pretty. It was like a white.
Yeah. The pod.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I floated
it's
in yesterday.
Really expensive because I've seen other places that are so much cheaper for much longer. You can get like 2 hours for $45. And this one was like an hour for $75 or something.
Yeah.
It was expensive. I was like, oh.
Yeah, there are two different places. There are a couple of different places in town, and one of them I used to go there. That's
yeah,
where
Westwood,
I started.
Right?
Yeah, I started there. It was actually
and
in Venice.
I think
Venice was
both.
The original
place.
That's
I like that.
That's
place.
The Float Lab. That's Crash. That's
yeah,
the only...
he's great, and I love, yeah, and Kobe, who works there, is great.
Yeah, and but yesterday I got invited to Paws, which is on Washington Boulevard, and I
Culver.
Went in, yeah, and I went to the pod, and that was amazing, but I don't even know how much it was. They comped me, but
right.
That's, you so know, fancy. Celebrity breathwork
so
teacher,
fancy.
Okay, a celebrity. So, yeah, so it was fun, and but I have one in my house, so I don't have to share and think about other people going in there. And
well, now you put that in my
no,
head.
No, but, well,
come
here's
on.
The thing. It's you take a shower before and after. Nothing can live in 800 pounds of Epsom salt. It has a filtration system that's incredible.
Can I tell you my thing?
Sure.
And I know this is way too long, so I apologize, guys. So I have a fear, and I'm going to start talking about it because I talked about it our episode. We just did our 100th episode. Can you believe it?
Oh, my God.
And I was talking about it, that I have this crazy irrational fear of snakes.
Okay.
Crazy.
Well, that's actually ingrained in your DNA, though.
Yes, I'm sure. And I know there's like spiritual symbolism to it and all of that. And I've had actually some amazing meditations and moments with snakes that are not scary, or I've been like, holy shit, I can't believe this is happening because I am terrified by snakes. This is incredible. Like, so the last time I floated, which was amazing. I was in there for over 2 hours. It went by like that. Incredible. But in towards the beginning, all of a sudden as I'm lying there and it's dark, right? Sensory deprivation. I'm like, there's a fucking snake in here. Now, look, I knew the logic. I kept saying, use your logic, use your logic. You know there's not a snake in here. You know it's your fear coming up. And you know that's like, it's just coming up. So just use your logic. There's not a snake in here. Calm down, do breath. Like I was chanting, I like mantras, so I was chanting my mantras. And like eventually I got through it. But I'm not kidding you. For like 20 minutes, I was like, what if there's a fucking snake in here? It's like that irrational fear that the snake's going to come up the toilet.
Sure, sure.
Except then I just heard it happen to someone, and now I'm like, well, thanks for that. I always thought that was like, you know, a myth and a legend. And now I'm like, now every time I go back on there, I'm like, I just have to unravel like 20 more years of fear of a snake coming up my toilet. So it's the same thing. So I haven't been able to float since then. I think I'm going to go on Thursday.
So your brain is this powerful thing, right?
Powerful.
And that's why, like, if you did psychedelics.
See, Tom's laughing at me. I don't blame you.
If you do psychedelics and you start to have a bad trip, it's really your mind just taking over and going down that dark road,
totally.
Right?
Totally.
And so there's a thing. It's called the reticulator activating system, right? And so it's like when you buy a car and all of a sudden you see that same car everywhere, your brain is looking for certain things.
Right.
And often it's looking for what's wrong in your life and what's missing in your life. And if you're always looking for what's wrong or what's missing, you're going to be fucking miserable all the time.
Right.
Your brain doesn't give a shit about your happiness, right? Its job is to protect you, and that's what it thinks it's doing. So you have to override that, and that's why.
So I know I have to go float again because I know it's going to probably come up again. And it's like, and now there'll probably be like 40 fucking snakes in there with me, and I'm just going to have to like get through it and like face my fear. But I'm like, why haven't I been floating? Like,
maybe
I
you
really
need to
liked
go
it. I'm like,
lay
oh.
down with snakes, and then
I know,
the float
that's
tank
the
will be
final it. Thing, which we talked about on the podcast last time, and I was like, I know I need to
it's
just
like
hold
some fear
one.
Factor shit right
yes.
there.
Yes. Ultimately, I'll do that. I'll keep everybody posted because I do think that is what's going to have to happen is I'm going to have to do that. I'm not going to like it.
I
but
know,
I'm going to do it.
I
and
know,
I'll get there. I'm going to overcome this fear.
As soon as I leave here, I'm going to think of some other obsession that I have. Like,
always let us know.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so mountains or beach?
Probably mountains. I live in the mountains.
Right, but did that change? Were you beach before? Like, do you feel like you were meant to be mountains and you were, like, denying it? Like, what do you think? Because it's switched.
I have a fear of the water. I've almost drowned twice.
Oof, Jesus.
And that the only anxiety panic attack I've ever had.
We're getting real dark at the end of this podcast. I like it.
No, I don't think so. I mean, listen, I had a panic attack. I had an anxiety attack, like scuba diving. It's the only time it's ever happened to me. And it was fucking terrifying. And I was like 40 feet down. There was no visibility. And a fucking shark came out of the dark.
Well, that's terrifying.
Yeah. And
that's
I started
legit.
To... and the air was going out of the tank.
And
like
then
super,
that made you more
yeah,
nervous.
It was just awful. And but I love the ocean. I used to surf. I'm a terrible swimmer. And so I just feel safer and more connected and more grounded in the mountains. And I just love the view and the beauty of them. So...
Well, you are amazing. We are going to do a personal practice. Was that 3 or 4? Well, we're going to pretend it's 4. We did 4 years. I was like, did I ask 4 questions or 3? Because we kept talking so much. I don't even
sure.
remember.
Sure. What are the 4 questions again?
Well, I just asked you. We did, let's see, obsession.
Yeah.
We did mountains or beach.
Okay.
We did what do you do when you wake up? And I feel like, was there one more or no?
What about like, doesn't James Lipton...
Well, how about this? What's your
what
biggest...
does James Lipton do? Like, what do you want God to say when you get to the...
Sure. What would you like God to say to you when you get to the pearly gates?
I just set myself
sorry,
up...
Sorry, James, for stealing it. It's
his fault. Sorry, I set myself up for that. I think I would like him to say that you did...
I love you.
You did a good job. You did good work. And you helped a lot of people.
And you are. And you do. So I'll say it. I know I'm not God, but does that help a little bit?
Thank you.
No, of course. You're amazing. I'm always so happy to talk to you. And so you guys, he has his certifications are online. Those workshops are compiled to that 5-day detox.
Yeah, the way the certification works is I have two different courses and you can do them. You got to do both of them to get a certification. And you can do them either both in person or both online or one in person and one online. But you got to do both courses and I give you certification. But it's actually the easiest. I don't want to say the easiest. It's like the shortest route to breathwork certification because there's so many people out there and they're charging like $8,000 and it's a year. It's insane. And it's like, what are you getting for $8,000? Like I've distilled it down to what you actually need to take someone through a session or to lead a class or something like that. I've made it like this is all you need to do it. And I do bigger classes more often than anyone else that I know of on the planet.
Yeah, right now. Your classes are packed. So go to denanywhere.com, and we're giving you 30% off of all of this stuff. So just put in den30, and it's yours for 30% off. And I promise you, your life will be changed in an amazing way. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
No, of course. And stay tuned because he will be doing his personal practice. John Paul's going to lead us in a personal practice where he's going to read the heart prayer.
This is something I read sometimes at the end of my class. It's called the heart prayer. I am in this body, but I am not the body. I and the body are separate. The body is mine for only a short time. Even if I live 100 years more, it will go by like a flash. Everything outside of my heart is not truly mine. I own nothing in this world. Everything I own is contained in my heart. The love I have for others and the love they feel for me is mine. My connection with God is mine. My wisdom is mine. My joy is mine. I breathe into my heart and breathe out from my heart. May I not waste another moment withholding love for anyone or myself.
Talks podcast would not exist without these incredible people, Nicole Rappi, Reem Edon, Hayden Fungheiser, Kim Bielek, and music by Alex Fetter. Thanks for joining us. If you haven't subscribed, please do. And also wherever you listen, please go and leave us a review. It's so greatly appreciated. It really does help us out. If you want to keep talking about all this stuff, please join our community on our secret Facebook page. Go to Facebook, search Den Talks Podcast, and join us there.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.